Welcome to the Leader, Manager, Coach podcast, where we share knowledge, philosophies, wisdom, and insight to help you on your journey in both sport and life. Introducing your host, Rob Riles.
Hello, and welcome to the Leader, Manager, Coach podcast. Welcome along. It's Rob Riles welcoming you to another edition. Now, for today's programme, I'm going to introduce you to somebody who is a real good friend of mine and somebody that I've not seen for quite a while, but we've kept in touch. And the reason I wanted to get this person on the podcast is because he is astoundingly inspirational. Knowing him and the story of his life is really humbling, because of reasons that will become apparent as we go through. And I'm in sunny Staffordshire, and I'm in the heartland of Stoke-on-Trent in this gentleman's home. And he's kindly invited me to his home. And his home, as humble as it is absolutely inspiring. And I'm surrounded by boxing and football memorabilia, not things that you can just pick off the shelves, but really unique photographs. I'm looking at people like Joe Frazier. I'm looking at people like Sugar Ray Robinson. I'm looking at people like Pele. And it is truly inspiring if you're a sports person. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce you to a gentleman called Lindsay Layton. And you know, I could actually rattle off what this gentleman's achieved in his life. And the amazing thing about Lindsay is that to the way the world works and classifies people, whether you agree with it or not, is not the point. But Lindsay would be classified in the way of the world in terms of how the world bizarrely has a classification system as somebody who is disabled. Now, I could not be in the presence of somebody who is less, who shows less disability if I tried. He is, you know, words sometimes fail me at what this person's achieved in life. Lindsay, welcome to the podcast, and thank you for inviting me to your home.
Good afternoon and welcome, Rob. Yeah.
Well, what I'd like you to do as an introduction is I want you to just tell us a little bit about, just give us a little brief history of what you've achieved in your life. You know that those things we talked about and you sent me that, I said, can I have a little biography of all the things you've achieved in your life? Just start with that, because that'll give us a little bit of context before we kind of go into the detail.
Okay. Yeah, born with brittle bones, osteogenesis imperfecta, to medical care people.
Right.
Breaking my leg nearly every year. Spent a lot of time in Bill Grange Hospital, Stoke-on-Trent, where I was taught the game of chess, which I loved playing, and I actually won quite a few competitions at chess at the age of 12. So what happened then is, at the age of 13, I thought about, I'd heard about bucket lists. So I decided that I was going to create a bucket list. Uh-huh. And with a hospital teacher, I sat down and he said, what do you want to achieve? I said, as much as possible, right? So, as I say, at the age of 13, I drew up a bucket list. And I'd already been to a school in near Rudyard Lake, okay, beautiful school called Horton Lodge. And then as I got older, I moved to Wolverhampton, to a school called Whittycall School. And whilst I was there, my four other friends, we decided to become musicians. And we formed our first band, right? Was called Silky Blue, right? So we started to play for other schools, and we played it. After I left school, we started playing in clubs around the West Midlands. So that was my start of my musical career. After that, at the age of 16, I went into playing, athletics, going into athletics. Wolverhampton had a great sporting stadium called Aldersley Sports Stadium. And there I went into track events, 100-metre sprints, 200-metre sprints, and I even tried my hand at javelin, which wasn't too bad. I was pretty rubbish at the shot put because I threw the ball once and it was so heavy. It nearly landed on the foot plate of my wheelchair and broke my toe.
Are you struggling to find that extra edge to help you stand out above the crowd? Separating yourself from the rest is often about personal leadership. Achieve your true potential and become who you really can be. The Leader Manager Coach Pro Course is a unique membership accessing the knowledge and wisdom from history's greats that will help you develop both personally and professionally to make you truly stand out. The Leader Manager Coach Pro Course. Access now at patreon.com. Leader Manager Coach.
So after that, I decided I was going to be playing pool. I love playing pool because snooker was too big a table for me to reach and play on. But I became a pool champion, entered such competitions like the White Mackay Whiskey Trophy in Great Yarmouth, right? And that was at the age of 21. I heard about wheelchair basketball. So, at the age of 25, I played for Stoke Spitfires in the National League. And one of my teammates was a guy called Sir Philip Craven, right, who is well known around disabled sports. He's an inspiration and played a major part of my life. And he was a great player. Even in his 60s, the guy could do hook shots and everything. He was brilliant. And he got me into wheelchair basketball in a big way. And we got into trouble because we had one of the world's best wheelchair basketball players playing for the Stoke Spitfires, a little team, right, in the league. So that's when I was approached by a guy called John Courts. Now, John was an Olympic retired champion in rowing, right? And he called me at Stoke City, where I worked, and asked me if he could come down and interview me because he got a dream, okay? Now, when he said the word dream, that rung bells in my head because obviously, I'd got a dream. He came to see me, and we went into the interview room at Stoke City, and he told me his dream was to build a team of disabled athletes to go to New Zealand and take part in a sport that I'd never heard of before, and that sport was outrigger canoeing. And it was in 2008 that he decided that he was going to put together this team to go to Lake Karapiro, Hamilton, New Zealand, right? So there was 18 different nations. We got a team that consisted of people with different disabilities, and we trained at Trenton Lake, and that would be on a Wednesday night, and on Sunday mornings, we would play. We would go out and train at Rudyard Lake. So my Sunday mornings consisted of early morning on Rudyard Lake in the ice conditions with icicles hanging off my watch jacket, and then in the afternoon basketball, and then home for dinner, and then out playing in my band in the evening.
All in the same day?
All in the same day. I was knackered. But I was having fun, yeah. My wife at the time wasn't happy because I was never at home, as you can imagine. And she didn't really want to take part in what I was doing. But she was proud of me, just the same. So anyway, we went to New Zealand, and there was, as I say, there was about 18 different nations. Oh, it's a Polynesian sport, is the outrigger canoe. Uh-huh. And there was places like New Zealand, Australia, USA, Tonga, Western Samoa, all the Polynesian groups, and they were superb because it was their sport. And I was at the back of the boats, still paddling, but also using my paddle as an oar to steer the boat.
Okay.
Which I managed to do quite well. So when you are the steerer, you are the captain. So you shout all the instructions. It's a bit like a coxswain on a boat.
Mm.
Well, I was shouting the instructions. And as I say, we got a scratch team together who are the best friends I've got now. And I'd say we did pretty well because we actually won the World Sprint Championships.
Right. So you're a world champion?
I'm a world champion, yes. So it was... I would say that's probably one of the biggest sporting achievements which I've done. Also, I mean, I've done things like level 2 certificate in football coaching. And I used to manage a team of deaf players for Stoke City.
Wow.
Right. So I learned a little bit of sign language. Wasn't the best, but I knew how to show shin pads and kicking a ball with my fingers, right? So they understood me, but one guy, he didn't say shin pads, he said skin pads, right? but that was an experience. And as I say, I've done the Michelin 10K.
For anybody who doesn't know, it was, because I don't think it's going now, Linz, is it?
No, I don't think it is.
No, it was a very famous local running event, wasn't it? Run every year.
Yeah.
I mean, some big high-profile people used to run in that, didn't they? Some, you know.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was a book called Burslem Saturday, which Anthony Forster did all the illustrations.
Right.
And it was being launched on that occasion. And I was the person who contributed right. to the launch. And the Michelin 10K was to support that. And I achieved to complete that.
Well, yeah.
I was well knackered at the end of it all, because I can remember one of the managers at Renploy, where I worked, he'd set the whole thing up and he was waiting for me at the finish line. And he was holding a glass of lager, right? And he said, would you like a drink? Meaning a sip. But I downed it. I drunk the whole
thing. Did you do it in your wheelchair, Linz?
I did it in my wheelchair. Yeah, yeah. Yes. Yeah. But I downed this. And also, I took part in the what's known as the Potteries Marathon.
Yes.
It's a 26-mile marathon around Stoke-on-Trent. And I've got a friend who worked for JCB. Now, JCB factories, on every side, there's a lake, right? And the big main lake at Roaster in Niigatoxete has a lake with a track around it. And my basketball team and ourselves, in our basketball chairs, did a 26-mile marathon around wow. that. Red hot, right? But completed it. And together, going over, we didn't want to have any winners to cross the line. We all wanted to do it together. So we got the wheels set in motion.
Wow.
And we held hands as we went to...
What a beautiful story, mate. Just that one on its own.
Oh, without a doubt. So there's people like Mark Bracken, beautiful person. Dave Beaumont,
yeah.
another wheelchair user,
right.
who's a professional pool player, right? Around the country,
yeah.
well known. Andy Flower, my best mate, yeah. Just an inspiration, just really good. And Andy Flower was my first drummer in the band,
right.
Silky Blue.
Yeah.
Right. He doesn't do it no more.
I know. So, yeah. So what else have you done? Because you've done some other stuff, mate, as well, haven't you?
Yeah. I'm just in the process of completing the bucket list by writing a book.
Right.
And the book's going to be obviously about me and where I was born in Scotland, in Ayrshire, 1961. And
so you were born, and you obviously were born with your osteogenesis imperfecta.
Yes.
Which I'm assuming for any parents at that time was quite a shock, I should imagine.
Yes.
And do you remember what your childhood was like as regards the fact that you had this, you know, disease process, that you had to kind of live a life that wasn't, I'll use the word normal, Lindsay, because
yeah.
it's probably the easiest way.
Yeah.
Can you remember anything about that in terms of how your parents were about that? Because there must be some challenges for parents when you've got a child that's has to be protected in some ways, again, if I can use that phrase.
Yeah, well, I was actually born with a broken femur.
You okay. came into the world with a broken femur. Yeah.
Now, this is a funny story, Rob, because my mother was concerned why I kept crying all the time.
Right.
Right? And the doctor at the time said, he's teething, right? That's why he's crying. So just give him some tooth tincture.
And it'll soothe it.
And it'll soothe it. And she really? Says, well, his leg's warm, right? There's a heat coming from his leg. And the doctor says, he's teething. Don't worry about it. His body's going to be warm anyway. So after numerous tests, they found out I'd actually got a broken leg, right? And I can remember in my cot in Kilmarnock Royal Infirmary with my legs in the air, right, as they didn't have tractions in them days. They didn't have what's known as a Thomas' splint.
It's Thomas' splint, yeah.
Yeah, so...
And if anybody doesn't know what a Thomas' splint is, it's an iron splint that your leg went in to keep it in a certain position, isn't it, Lindsay, to allow a fracture to heal, yeah?
Yeah, and I used to have many a time wearing a Thomas' splint. The ring round it was very uncomfortable. And after you'd had it on for 6 months, it took ages to be able to bend your knee because your leg was static.
So just while we're on this point, if I said to you, how many times have you had a broken bone, do you know?
About 36 times.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, because that's pretty good, actually, for a person with brittle bones, yeah. Because I know people who broke their legs going into the 200s.
Uh-huh.
Now, the pain is just unbelievable, yeah. And my last fracture was last May in 2022. And I had a fall whilst getting there, transferring from my bed into my wheelchair. And unfortunately, I broke my femur, my tibia and fibula.
In the same go?
In the same go. Right.
I'm only laughing, Lindsay, because I know how you view things like that.
Well, when people said to me, said, what have you done? I said, I broke my leg in three places. He says, whereabouts? I says, Tunstall, Birdland, and Hanley.
See that? I'm right.
Yeah. So, no, I was in Stafford Hospital for 5 weeks and then home for the remaining time to recover. But unfortunately, I didn't recover because I can only spend 3 hours a day in my wheelchair and maybe 1 to 2 days a week if I'm lucky.
So would it be fair to say at this moment in time, Lindsay, that you're pretty much bedbound?
I spend, I would say, 99% of the time of my week in bed.
And people need to realise that because until you have to do that, Lindsay.
Yeah.
I don't think it's possible to empathise fully with what that's like and having to deal with that.
Yes. My bed is right next to my window, looking out onto my lawn. And I moved into this house about 15 years ago. And when I moved in, some friends of mine, colleagues from Stoke City Football Club, helped me to move in and give the place a quick slapping with the paint. I got some cheap carpets from Norris Carpets in Stoke. And I made do until last November when I decided it was time to spend a bit of money on
good
the
lad.
House.
Good lad.
Yeah. So I had it completely carpeted. Yeah. In a nice grey hard-wearing carpet, but not too hard-wearing. I had it decorated from a friend who's a professional decorator. He did it at mates' rates. And as I say, my bed is right, looking over onto my lawn. And I've got a mate who's a drummer with the band I was last with, what I want to talk about later. He's coming. He's a landscape gardener. So for mate rates, he's going to do me a beautiful landscape garden.
For you to look out on, yeah?
For me to look out on. And also he's going to be making a path. So I can actually
get out.
Yeah, I can get onto the lawn and
brilliant.
And sit out in the summer.
Yeah.
And have a non-alcoholic beer.
Because I've known you, Lindsay, for, I mean, we talked about time and we've kind of pushed away the fact that let's not get hung up about exact dates because we both just know it seems a long time, but for a good few years. And you've always, since I've known you, been somebody who has laughed off any kind of embarrassment or any kind of thought or anything that would even think that you would be incapable of doing things that people who haven't got osteogenesis imperfecta could do. You've always seemed to me somebody that doesn't even take into account that you couldn't do something. You've just got on with it. I mean, I've seen you sing on stage. I've seen you successful in your own business. And I've seen you overcome a great deal of adversity, albeit from afar, Lindsay, you know.
Yeah.
And where does that come from? Because it's not common, and I'm not saying it's uncommon, I'm not saying you're unique because nobody else has that approach, but...
This is a reminder. The bar is open.
Is that your bar, Lindsay?
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah.
This is a reminder. The bar
is open. Thank you. And... where does that come from? So where's your attitude come from? Because you have, I can't ever remember you complaining once about anything, Lindsay.
Well, I very seldom complain. It's very rare because I'm not a negative person.
But where's it come from?
I suppose my granddad, who I never ever met, my mum's dad was called Hugh Williams. He was a disabled guy who used to ride around on his bike in Conwy, North Wales. And he was married to my grandma, Margaret, who originally was from Liverpool. And I don't want to use any wrong sort of terminology, but she was a cantankerous old bitch.
Okay.
Right? We used to hate her coming to Stoke-on-Trent to come and stay with us because she was really hard work. And a funny story I'll just tell you quickly was that my father, who hadn't got much patience for my gran and me, went to Stoke Railway Station to meet her, right? And she had to get a train from London Junction, changing it crew to get to Stoke-on-Trent. And him and I were standing on platform one at Stoke Railway Station, and he said to me, "She's not going to be on the train. I bet she won't make the connection at crew." And anyway, the train pulls up, and the announcement come over, the train arriving on platform one, right? And anyway, the doors were opening, people were getting off the carriages onto the platform. No gran. And my dad says, "I bloody told you. I told you she wouldn't be on the train. I told you she'd miss the connection." So anyway, the train pulls away. And as it pulls away, there's my gran on the track, dusting herself off. She'd only got out the train the wrong side and fell out onto the track.
Yeah. So how did she get up?
She just...
climbed up.
She brushed herself down and my dad had to, like, give her a hand up.
Manhandle her up.
Yeah. And that was just... that was my gran. Yeah, Margaret Williams.
So yeah. why was it your granddad that was the inspiration?
Well, my granddad died. He got polio.
Right.
He died whilst my mum and dad were on honeymoon. As I say, his name was Hugh Williams. He was in a Welsh male voice choir, right, which I absolutely love. And I suppose that's where my music came from.
Because you're a decent singer yourself.
Oh, yeah, I love singing. And I used to love listening to male voice choirs, especially Welsh ones, because it reminded me of my granddad, who I never met.
And was it because of his disability that he did things? Is that why he inspired you?
Yeah, because he was a bit of a sod. He liked his women. And I can't blame him, actually, because my gran wasn't one of the best.
I don't know what to say about this, but anyway.
He had a young girlfriend who he used to ride to on his bike.
Okay.
And anyway, him having a disability and having a very good outlook on life sort of made me think, right, I want to do something with my life.
So that was the reason. He was kind of somebody that you looked up to in terms of he got on with his life and achieved things.
Yeah. So I thought, well, if Hugh Williams can do it, then so can I.
So is there anything in your life that you've ever... what about doubts? Because, look, human nature is... you know, what did Shakespeare say? Shakespeare said, "Our doubts are traitors, which make us lose the good we oft might win by fearing to attempt."
Yes.
You could say means it's the doubts that undermine you. So if you didn't have the doubts, you'd just do it. And I'm looking at somebody who seemingly has lived that.
Yeah.
Have you ever doubted yourself? Do you doubt yourself?
I never really doubted myself because at school, as I say, I started being a musician. I played the piano, right? And I was banned from playing the piano because I was a bit like Little Richard and kept thumping the keys and knocking a grand piano out of tune.
Okay.
Which cost a fortune to retune. So that's when I took up guitar. And I learned to play the guitar within about 2 months.
Do you have an aptitude for that? Because that's not something you could just do, I don't think.
There was a guy who was in the band with me, a school chum. He was an excellent guitarist. And he sat down and taught me. And there was a guy, he was a blind guy, who also played classical guitar. And he was left-handed, right?
Mm.
So what I used to do is sit in front of a mirror so that the reflection would come back so I could mimic exactly what chords he was playing.
Wow.
And he was an inspiration. He played the piano and sang.
Did you have to practice hard?
Yeah. I used to practice most days, and we used to have rehearsals every day after school in the assembly room at Whittycull School. And as I say, I went on to be a decent musician, playing with some big bands.
What, out of all those achievements, Linz, which, you know, listen, just because you've, you know, it's life's a personal journey, isn't it? And you've done all these things and look, you know, you've certainly achieved. Out of all of them, or things maybe you haven't mentioned, is there anything that you're particularly more proud of than anything else?
Becoming a musician.
Seriously?
Becoming.
Even though you became a world champion?
Yeah, that's nothing.
Why?
Compared to. Because I didn't discover that I could sing until I was 14. I was at a girlfriend's house, staying for the weekend. She was upstairs, and I was downstairs with a microphone and a guitar. And I was always a guitarist in the band Silky Blue. And what happened was I started to sing. And I used to be able to mimic the voice of Don Henley and
Boys of Summer
and Glenn Frey. Yeah, the Eagles, because my girlfriend at the time introduced me to the Eagles and Peter Frampton. So Peter Frampton being a good guitarist, I couldn't play the guitar to the level of what Peter Frampton could. And neither could I play like Joe Walsh or Glenn Frey from the Eagles. But I could sing. And I could sing like Glenn Frey and Don Henley. And she was upstairs having a bath and she heard me. And she come down and she said, "Lindsay, you've got one hell of a voice. Why don't you go on your own?" So I left Silky Blue.
And what was that like when you had to leave them? Were the lads upset or this?
They were upset, yeah, because we've been together since the mid-70s.
Were they positive for you, or?
Well, they realised because I'd got a girlfriend and I was planning to get engaged.
Yeah.
And I thought my love life was more important than playing in a band, right? It just got in the way. Anyway, as I say, I went off and did a solo career. And I'm just a singer, guitarist. And I got myself booked into some local pubs and clubs. And
you used to drive yourself around?
I used to drive myself around, yeah.
Did you need help to get your gear in?
I could. Even being in a wheelchair,
you could get it in.
I could lift the speakers into the back of a mini metro, yeah. And as I got more successful in bigger bands, the PA systems got quite big, and I needed a van then. And we bought an old yellow post office van, a Commodore Dodge, and we used to do all the gigs. Because when I first started off as a single musician, I was a comedian as well.
Honestly?
Yes. And I used to be called the Poison Dwarf. Right?
Did you name yourself?
I named myself the Poison Dwarf after the character in Dallas. Right? So, anyway, I got the drummer, Andy Flower, from the Silky Blue, and he come and we joined with another guy called Mark on bass, and drummer Andy and myself, we formed the Poison Dwarfs.
Another band?
Another band playing around the pubs and clubs.
What's the best venue you've played at?
I would say the Britannia Stadium.
Seriously?
Seriously.
Wow. So that wasn't too long ago, because that was only built about just over 20 years ago.
Yeah, it was actually 12 years ago.
Wow.
It was for my 50th birthday.
Wow.
And I reformed the band Don't Ask, which was my favourite band.
So you've had three, you've been in three bands?
I was in Silky Blue, the Poison Dwarfs, then the Creatures, then Don't Ask.
Wow.
And the funny story is about Don't Ask. Some fellow musicians, we all met in a pub in Burslem, sat round a table, and we were deciding to form the band, but we couldn't come up with a name. So we all wrote names down on a bit of paper, threw them into a hat, and the first name, what was going to come out, was going to be the name of the band. So I threw in the name Mr. President, right? Other guy threw in a band called True Colours, yeah? Other one threw in a band called The Misfits. So we drew out the name, and I said, oh, Mr. President, that's what we're going to be called. And they said, no, I don't like it. So we all sat around, and nobody could decide. So there was a girl walked in, said, oh, look at you lot, you're all musicians. She says, you must be forming a band. And I said, yes. She says, what are you going to be called? And we all turned around and said, Don't Ask.
All together in unison.
In unison. And she said, what a fantastic name.
Did she?
Yeah. She says, I can't wait.
Great story, mate.
So, yeah.
Now, talking about funny stories, because you've got one or two, yeah? You not only have got a list of things you've achieved, mate, you have got an ability to narrate and hold attention and tell a story.
Yes.
Undoubtedly.
Yeah.
There's a couple of funny stories. There's one about shopping, isn't there, when you went...
Yeah.
Is that worth mentioning, or I'll leave you to it, because you can laugh at yourself, mate, and you can tell a story, so...
Yeah, well, yeah, this was a particular time, and my wife at the time, she said, Lindsay, we've got nothing in for our meal tonight. She says, can you go down to the co-op and see what you can get? So I pushed along in my wheelchair and got into the store, and I started to look around, and I went into a chest freezer, right? And I wasn't really, really good at reaching things, and there was some frozen meals at the bottom of the chest freezer. But me being little, I was finding it difficult to reach and get myself the meal. So I started to look around, but there was no members of staff. So I thought, oh, sod it, I'll have a go. So I opened the lid as far as I could, reached over, and fell in. So I'm in this freezer, wondering how the hell I'm going to get back in my wheelchair. Yeah. At that point, a member of staff said, oi, what are you doing in that freezer? I said, I fell in. She says, well, get out. I said, I can't. I can't get out. You'll have to come and lift me. She says, I can't lift you. I've got a bad back. Right? So between the pair of us, we managed to get So every time I went back in that shop, she used to run from the behind the till and come to my assistance straight away.
It's a great story, Lindsay. It's a great story, mate.
Yeah.
It's great. I think, obviously, I knew you when you worked at Stoke City, yeah? So, yeah. Look, you know, a lot of this podcast is about football in terms of its listenership. And we are passionate about the beautiful game. And obviously, you are. You're sitting there with your Kilmarnock shirt on, proudest punch, mate, and top man as well. So what was it you did at Stoke City?
At first, I helped to set up the disabled supporters.
Uh-huh.
Right? I'm a firm believer on creating a situation, as I used to call it. And I'd heard from a guy at Derby County called Keith Marsden, who was their disability liaison officer. So, me being a Stoke supporter, disabled, I thought, I wonder whether Stoke City have got a disabled liaison officer, right? So, I booked an appointment to go and see then the stadium manager called John Alcock. And I went in to see him. And
you didn't know John at this point?
I didn't know John. No, I did know John because he used to get me my parking space at the old Victoria Ground, which wasn't really a space. But he used to help me to get my tickets.
The top man, huh?
Yeah, he's a great man. Him and his assistant, Rob Carter. Anyway, so I went to see John and I said, John, have you got a disability liaison officer? He says, what's one of those? I said, well, Keith Marsden over at Derby County, he looks after all the disabled supporters, sees to their ticketing needs and their parking. Right, no, we haven't got one. Why? I said, well, I would be interested in being Stoke City's disability liaison officer. So he said, well, you are the disability liaison officer.
The best, quickest interview in the world, eh?
Yeah. So I got myself a job, yeah, and I went to work with a guy called Andy Morgan.
Yeah, Morgs.
And a girl called Nikki Yates.
Yeah,
who's now Nikki Watson. Anyway, I set up the disabled supporters, which was Stoke City Wheels in Motion, SWIM, yeah. And that's when I became the disability liaison officer, but also public relations. So I dealt with working with obviously the public. And after Nicky left and went to move to Glasgow, Terry Conroy, ex-winger for Stoke City,
Air International,
1972
League Cup winner.
Yeah, winner. He scored the second goal for Stoke City.
He did.
And Terry and I shared an office. Now, Terry's a remarkable guy, a really good friend of mine, but he was a nightmare to share an office with.
Was he? Why?
Because I used to be dealing with people, the public, who maybe had gone through some adversity, maybe a death, right? So I'm on the phone, speaking quietly, consoling them because they've lost somebody and they want their ashes scattering around the Stanley Matthews. Yeah, well, they wouldn't allow them on the pitch because the only person's ashes was Sir Stanley Matthews,
right,
which was in the centre circle.
Right.
But we certainly could, around Stanley Matthews' statue, which is on the North Car Park at the stadium. And I would be saying to these people, look, please come to the stadium. I'll give you a tour. I'll give your family members and friends a tour so I can ease the pain for you, yeah? And then we can take the ashes and scatter them and you can spend a bit of time. Yeah. In the meantime, whilst I'm doing that, Terry Conroy's got the radio on and he's singing at the top of his voice. Now, I'm trying to console this person on the phone. Yeah. And all I can hear is Terry saying, "Have a nice day." Yeah, and I'm thinking, oh, no.
That was Terry, yeah?
That was Terry. Terry's he's an amazing, amazing guy.
I'm looking around your room, Lindsay, and you know, we said this before we came on air, that I was happily jealous because there's pictures of you with Smoking Joe Frazier, and there's pictures of you with Ricky Hatton, and there's a picture of you with Sugar Ray Leonard.
Yes.
There's a picture of you with Pelé.
Yes.
I mean, you couldn't get a greater Hall of Fame for somebody who loves boxing and football if you tried.
Yeah.
And here's little old you with, and I'm going to be brutal about it, with your osteogenesis imperfecta.
Yeah.
You know, I'm looking at these photographs and, you know, you're with icons of the world here. You're not with people who haven't done anything. These are household names from the last 50 years, whatever you want to say, you know, for Pelé and Joe. You know, you've spent time with people who have really done things in the world, Lindsay.
Yes. Well, if you ever read any of the books belonging to these people, they said, yeah, I'm famous and what I've achieved in my sporting career. But I've got to read Make No Bones by Lindsay Layton.
And that's going to be the title of your book, yeah?
That's going to be the title of the
book. And that's an ongoing project that's in its formative stages at the minute, yeah?
Yeah. When I met Ricky Hatton, Rob, we were at a sportsman's dinner where Ricky was guest appearance, talking on the stage. And his girlfriend Jennifer and I and Ricky sat down and had a meal.
Yeah.
And he got up on stage and was very funny. And he said to me, he didn't say to me, he said to the audience, he said, "Look, in the room tonight on table 16, I've been sitting having my sportsman's dinner with an inspiration, a guy called Lindsay Layton." He said, "Now, he's there on table 16 in the wheelchair, but he can't stand up, right? He's told me today that he is a world champion canoeist, a musician." He said, "So he can't stand up, but what I want you all to do is to stand up and give him a round of applause. And in the meantime, I want him to come and join me."
Right.
And so he can share the stage with me and tell the audience about himself. And anyway, we had a bit of banter on stage and it was great.
Yeah.
Ricky is an absolute gem
of
a guy. Yeah, Pelly was an inspiration.
Was he? What was that like?
Pelly came to the Britannia Stadium for Gordon Banks' weekend of football. And that was great because there was likes of Garth Crooks, who I went to school with, by the way.
Did you? Seriously?
Yeah, Garth Crooks.
But St. Peter's he went to? Where did you?
Yeah, St. Peter's, exactly. By the old Victoria Ground.
Yeah.
So, at that at Stoke City at the time, there was people like Jimmy Greenough, Alan Hudson, what I believe was one of my favourite teams.
Well, absolutely. If you were that era, Lindsay, that was the golden era in the 70s.
Well, I used to be, because when I lived in Scotland, I lived in a cul-de-sac in a place called Belfield in Kilmarnock, and I was able to go around on a little trike around the little cul-de-sac safely. And we moved to Stoke-on-Trent to Selwyn Street in 1968. Now, I called it Coronation Street because it was full of bloody terraced houses, right? And I hated it.
Did you?
Yeah, because there was main roads at the bottom of the road, and no longer could I go out and play on my bike. Yeah. So I was restricted to playing.
Quite steep, isn't it, Selwyn Street?
No, it's flat.
Which, now, I'm getting mixed up. Is it in Stoke?
Yes, it's in Stoke. Are you thinking about Pencle Bank?
Is it parallel to Pencle Bank?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
That's why I'm assuming it's steep.
Yeah, Pencle Bank's off London Road.
Yeah.
And I used to struggle to push up there.
Who didn't?
Yeah, up to the Marcus of Granby.
Could you get up there on your wheelchair? Seriously?
It used to take me about half an hour to push from the bottom to the top.
Unreal.
Go and have a drink in the Marcus of Granby and the Greyhound, the Terrace, and then coming down the hill.
It's easy peasy, yeah.
Easy peasy, but it was a little bit...
dangerous.
Yeah, because I was slightly run over the eight, and I remember coming out the chair once and ending up in...
What a life you've had, mate.
Yeah.
Because that's God's country. I'm down there, mate. That's proper territory, yeah?
Oh, it's brilliant. Yeah, so Selwyn Street was right next to the football ground, the old Victoria ground. And I had to be content by sitting in my backyard and just listening to the
wow.
the crowds.
Right.
Right. And every time the crowd cheered and roared is when they scored a goal, right? And my dog at the time used to jump up and down and chase its tail every time Stoke scored. But the dog only did this maybe once or twice a year because Stoke City never scored. But I used to listen to the game, and I can remember being in hospital at Biddle Grange and listening to the 1972 League Cup.
Can you?
Yeah, against Chelsea, where we beat them 2-1.
Yeah, yeah.
And I used to hear the crowds in Selwyn Street, and I used to think, I'd love to go. So my dad carried me. He didn't take the wheelchair. He carried me just across the road into the ground on a Wednesday night. And we watched Newcastle United.
Wow.
And Stoke beat them 3-1.
Great memories, eh? Under floodlights.
Oh,
brilliant.
Oh, God, yeah. And that was when I got hooked.
Magical. Said, it's magical, isn't it?
Yeah. I said to my dad, can you take me, Dad? And he said, we'll see what we can do. So there used to be able to sit pitch side. And
wow. Yeah, the ball didn't come smashing into you, mate, yeah?
A few times, yes. And players, yeah. Many a time I'd had a player who'd overrun, especially when Pelly played once at the Britannia Stadium. He put his foot on the ball, and I think it was Terry Connolly at the time who was trying to mark him. Couldn't stop running and ended up falling into the crowd. Yeah.
You've also had a quite strong friendship with Lou McCarry, haven't you?
Yeah. Yeah, Lou, being another great Scot.
You're proud, aren't you?
Oh, love it, yeah. And I phoned him up the other night. I managed to find an old telephone number and for Gordon Banks. Unfortunately, Gordon's no longer with us, but I used to go to Gordon's for my tea.
Right.
And sit and watch the chase with his wife, Ursula, while he was out doing the garden.
Right.
And anyway, Gordon died. But Lou, found this piece of paper with Gordon's number and Lou's number. And I phoned Lou up the other night and I says, in my Scottish accent, hello, Mr. McCarry, is that you? And he says, aye, who is this? I says, oh, this is wee Lindsay Layton in the wheelchair. Well, I'm not going to swear, but...
Edit it out, yeah.
Yeah, it was... How the hell are you doing? I said, I'm brilliant.
Brilliant.
And we were chatting, and I said, Can you remember the game against Bolton Wanderers at the old Burden Park? I said the sight lines were terrible because the pitch was so high up.
Hmm.
I couldn't see the game from the disabled enclosure. And you came to me, and you and Chick Bates, you came to me and said, Lindsay, he said, you're having problems seeing the game. Come and join me in the dugout.
He didn't.
Yes.
Did you watch the game in the dugout?
Oh, yes.
Was Nello there?
Nello was there.
Was he?
And this is what...
Lindsay is fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Well, Nello, when I was talking to Lou, I was talking about Nello because him and Nello were great friends.
Yes.
Yeah. And still are to this day. And Neil Baldwin is Nello, right? He was the kit manager at Stoke. And I'm, as well as being a comedian and musician, I'm not bad at impressions. So I said to Lou, I said, Lou, remember Nello? Yeah. And I remember when I was, after a game, he'd be sitting outside the Britannia Stadium on the wall opposite the club shop, waiting for somebody to try and give him a lift home. I said, and I come through the double doors and was pushing across to my car, and he went, I said, hey, Neil, are you all right? Yeah, thank you. Where are you going? I says, I'm going home. How are you? Where do you live?
That's Nello.
I says, I live in Fenton. Fenton? Is that anywhere Newcastle? I says, no, Nello, it's nowhere near Newcastle. It's miles away. Why? I was wondering if you could give me a lift. So that was Nello always wanting a lift. Always cadging something.
You'd have given him one, though, Lindsay, I should imagine.
Yeah, of course you did.
I took him
home. And if you ever want to see a good film, there's a film about Nello Baldwin.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's called Marvellous. So you can get it on YouTube.
Yeah, yeah, it's brilliant. Yeah, it's both. Yeah.
You watch it, and I watched it and got quite choked up because I know Neil, and I love and respect what he's done in his life.
Mm.
And obviously, to make a film about him just shows where he is.
Yeah, and what he's done.
And what he's done.
Yeah.
So another inspiration. Thank you, Neil Baldwin.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You lovely clown.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we visited your early life, Lindsay, and what was your ultimate inspiration or your original inspiration, your granddad, and we visited your kind of school life days and your fractures and you know, being in hospital for prolonged periods and how you... You know, you learnt your music, you taught yourself, and you obviously had a couple of mentors, and you grabbed the bull by the horns and utilised that talent, and have been involved in four bands. You've had a solo career, and you've pushed the boundaries for disabled people and assisted disabled people, and gone out there and been really proactive, and not only asked other people to do it, but grabbed the bull by the horns and gone and done roles yourself and created roles for yourself at professional level. And you've befriended facilitators and influencers and, you know, people who've done great things in life, Lindsay, yeah? And
yeah.
I'm sitting here now, look, you know, with you, and you're in your... Look, let's be frank and brutal about it. You because of your body's ability to withstand stress, physical stress, you have to look after it and you have to abide by rules, which means you have to stay in bed for a prolonged periods of time.
Yeah.
You have people who come in, care staff, to assist you with what we all take for granted because, you know, we haven't got osteo, or I haven't got osteogenesis imperfecta, which, you know, but, you know, and you never... You laugh about your own misfortune in a way, yeah. if I could put that. And I've never, as I said before, never seen you not smile, not seen you ever not be happy and positive. And we've talked about doubt and how that might be a traitor sometimes in your life, and you've kind of, you know, explained that you've just got on with things, you know, and you've not only just got on with things, you've actually hit high levels, you know, world championship levels, things that seem impossible to somebody like me in terms of canoeing and basketball and, you know, you are truly inspiring, mate, you know, and I also know that this bucket list isn't finished yet, is it?
No, it's not. Well, you're here, and that's part of the reasons why the book is important to me. And now, I haven't mentioned some of the downsides in my life.
No, because it's, look, you know, let's talk about them to kind of round it off and give it a rounded thing.
My family has a history of liking alcohol. Uh-huh. My dad was a heavy drinker, and my mum used to like the odd occasional whiskey when I was out at the pub. And unfortunately, I'd started to drink quite heavily, and it was affecting my life. It didn't affect my musicianship. Just that I slurred when I was singing sometimes. and also, it didn't affect my sporting career. But it certainly made an impact on my marriage.
Did it?
Yeah, because I was married to a lady called Gwen, who I knew from school. And Well, to put it bluntly, she couldn't stand me when I was drunk.
And you understand that?
Yeah, but I also couldn't stand her when I was sober. Right? So, yeah, and she left me when I lived in Newcastle under Lyme. She left me and found a house in Benton. And I got a shock to have a note put, a letter shoved through the door when I was expecting her home, and it said that I've left you because I can't put up with you anymore. So after 9 months of being separated,
was that a painful time for you, Lynn?
It was a shock.
Uh-huh.
The marriage was really, it was called the 7-year itch, wasn't it? People call it the 7-year itch, and it was 7 years when we started to, because I was going out with playing in the bands and...
You weren't at home much, yeah.
I wasn't at home much, and when I was at home, I was drunk.
Mm.
So...
have you reflected on that and thought,
well,
I've got a different understanding, or...
Well, what happened was, is we separated... And we got back together, and I moved from the house in Newcastle, which I loved. It was a brilliant big bungalow. And I moved to her to a little sort of flat bungalow next to Fenton Park. And we carried on being married for several years. But again, things weren't working out. And... I found a bungalow just across the other side of the park where I live now, and it was a council. It's a council bungalow, and the council said, "Look, we're going to need 6 weeks to get this prepared for you to move into, right? So can you continue living where you are?" Mm. So I said to Gwen, "I said, look, it's going to take 6 weeks."
What, had you decided to separate for good then?
Yeah, oh yeah, it was going to be over. And I said, would you mind if I slept on the settee until my bungalow's ready? But she said, no, I want you help.
Mm.
And she asked her brother to come in and assist me to move out. And this moving out was me sleeping in my car at the Britannia Stadium.
For how long?
Homeless. Well, this 6 weeks.
What, you slept in your car homeless for 6 weeks?
Yes.
Seriously?
Seriously. And I was showering and shaving at the Britannia Stadium.
Where about your food?
Eating wherever I could eat.
And did you not have anybody to turn to?
No.
Or was it pride? Or
I didn't. It was pride. I didn't want to. I didn't want to mind my sister.
Or friends.
Or friends.
You feel embarrassed? Yeah, or?
My mate Paul. Him and his girlfriend. Invited me to stay at their flat in Stone, and I went to stay there, but I was sleeping on the floor in a sleeping bag, and there was dog hair all over the place.
So you've known some adversity, mate?
I've known really
a lot more than
to be homeless. Yeah. I wish I had known Lou Macari properly at this time, because that's what his main goal.
Yeah, what he's done is, we just talked about that before we came on, didn't we?
What he's achieved.
Amazing, amazing, beautiful man.
Yes, what he's achieved for homeless people.
So that's been a big adversity for you, that.
But that was another step for me to build my esteem and my confidence, because you learn, what's the word, through every adversity, there always seems...
The seed of an equivalent or greater benefit, yeah.
That's it, yeah. So, being made homeless, yeah, it was a sad time, and it was traumatic, but it was a stepping stone for me to be a much better person and appreciate where I am and what I do now.
Mm.
So, if I hadn't have gone through that, I wouldn't be looking to do what I'm doing now.
And would you say that your situation now, Lindsay, with your recent fractures and you know, the advice to spend so much time in the wheelchair and so much time in bed, and your reliance on regular care staff, how's that? What's the brutal reality of that like? I mean, you know, we all talk about it and it's commonplace, and, you know, what's that like to have to do that?
Well, as I say, I have to put up with being mostly confined to bed, right? And my day consists... Well, I keep a journal of my daily routine. And let me give you some of the... Today, Friday the 3rd of March, right, is every morning I take my medication, right? I also take my body temperature, right, which is normal, round about 36.6 degrees Celsius, right? And then I record the weather, all right? So today it's cloudy. This morning it started off at 2 degrees Celsius. Then this afternoon it's gone up to 5 degrees and it's cloudy. Not a particularly nice day. So I take my drugs, which are thiamine, baclofen, lansoprazole. I have to take 30 to 60 minutes before I have a meal. That's to stop me having heartburn. Yeah. I've got paracetamol in liquid form, so I can't take tablets. I don't take the paracetamol that often, because the only time I take paracetamol is if I've been in the wheelchair for longer than what I should. And last Tuesday was my neighbour's funeral.
Mm.
And I went out and I happened to be in the chair for 4 hours. Right. So the paracetamol's almost...
It was necessary. Yeah.
It's almost gone. I take vitamin tablets, B and D, 3, and I take them in the afternoons. And then I've got... Latanoprost, which is an eye drop to prevent glaucoma, which is a history in my family. And then I record which carers are on. And I have five main carers. and they're like daughters to me. And one of the carers, her name's Terry, she's got a daughter called Nicole. Nicole is 17, so she's my granddaughter. Right. Every day I have like today I've had a shower because I've got a good friend coming to see me called Rob Riles, right? This morning I had breakfast, which consisted of toast and apple juice. Then lunch, I'm not having any lunch because Rob's here, and I like to do the Pop Master quiz on Radio 2 at 10:20 a.m., right? And I do not bad. I get scores. I did quite well today. Not bad at all. And I play a game called Golf Clash on my mobile phone and my tablet.
I interrupted you the other day playing that.
Oh, yeah. Well, I played one game this morning, and I lost 8-10, so yeah. And today I'll be watching Emmerdale at 7 o'clock, and
so you have a structured timetable, mate. Yeah.
So I've got Bray steak tonight, and Friday is Guinness day, so I've got Guinness 0.0 non-alcohol Guinness.
Bless you. Well, look, it's coming up to towards 3 o'clock, and you know, I think we've got a beautiful potted history of your life so far, Lindsay.
Yes.
And I'm really happy with that, to share that.
Brilliant.
We've got stuff to look forward to in terms of your book in its formulation. So to conclude, I'd like to, number one, thank you for your friendship over the years. Number two, thank you for your time today. And just give you a chance in the last few seconds for you to have the last word. And just to say that if anybody's listening to this podcast who has doubts, is feeling that they can't achieve what it is they want, I think you're the perfect person to just leave this episode with a few words that maybe will just hit that right person at the right time.
Definitely. Yeah, my advice to people is don't think, just do. Right? So if you've got apprehensions about trying to achieve what you want to achieve, there's a book called Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway.
Uh-huh.
Right, and that's my biggest advice to anybody. Just do it.
Just do it. Lindsay Layton, thank you very much.
You're welcome, Mr. Robler.
So there we go. That's Lindsay Layton. And I felt it appropriate to say a few words after the interview with Lindsay, because this human being shows us a phenomenal range of attributes that I'm sure you'll agree with me contribute towards what you may call a successful life. So, to anybody with two functioning lower limbs who is able to walk around and actively get about, first of all, Lindsay can't do that. He's been confined to bed for a long time, apart from a short number of hours per day where he actually needs people to help him out of bed. He's essentially optimally dependent on other people. Yet, here's a person who has stopped himself from doing absolutely nothing. He's played music. He's played in bands. He's formed bands. He's started and ran his own businesses. He's engaged in numerous sporting activities to a very high level. He's a reader. He is an avid social media user. He is one of the most positive people that I know. He shows courage that's beyond most people's imagination, really, and is so worthy of study in terms of an example of a human being who forges on with life, irrelevant of the realities of the hand that they're dealt. It's well worth pondering on and considering when we have our own pity parties and when we sometimes engage in why me and how unfair this is. I challenge you to have a day of Lindsay's life and then see how grateful you are for your own state of affairs. Lindsay Layton, thank you.